All right, welcome back to Third String Podcast. It's been way too long since we did this podcast, but we're going to talk about the MLB trade deadline today and just a little tiny smidgen of NFL preview. And I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Pete LaCleed, who is with us after a two-week period, just gallivanting across the entire United States. But live and in person.
Gallivanting is the word I would use, more like dragged, kicking, and screaming. But okay, you are correct.
All right, yeah, but
every
just
time zone possible.
Every corner of the United States, he's now joining us live and in person from his living room, a guest bedroom, somewhere in the Las Vegas, Nevada desert surrounding area. Pete.
I feel like I'm in the desert. I am in the guest bedroom, but I kind of feel like I'm in the desert. It's like 110 here, and no one even cares. Like, it's been this hot for this long. It's almost like when I lived in North Dakota and it was negative 30 for 2 weeks straight. People just stopped caring. I don't get it. What's wrong with people?
You know, we've talked about heat on this podcast before, and you've complained about the Las Vegas heat before. And previously, I have sympathized with you. But you know what? When I look at the humidity index of Las Vegas and compare it to where I am in Austin, you got nothing on me, Pete. So,
oh, this dry heat argument is invalid, Zachary. Invalid.
I disagree.
It is hot.
I mean, sure, it's hot. Is it as hot as, you know, what would you rather have, Pete? What's the hottest it got today?
I saw 113.
Okay. Would you rather have 113 at 5% humidity or 108 at 70% humidity?
First,
I pose this to our listeners.
First, I don't understand percentages with humidity. So your question is completely invalid.
In fact, I completely made up those numbers. I actually don't know if that's reflective of reality or not, but it sounds good to me. So
then I'd counter your question with, are you mad at the humidity because it makes your golden red hair frizzy? Is that the problem here? And I have no hair, so that's what you're throwing at me. Is that the problem here?
So first of all, my hair doesn't get frizzy. It just gets a little wavy. I welcome the waves, Pete. In fact, it's the only silver lining of a humid summer day. So take that retort.
I want you to change your Twitter handle.
You're right there, Pete.
The waves. That insult didn't work nearly as well as I was hoping.
the red waves, something like that.
Yeah. I'm gonna be disappointed until I see that. Recently, I've been a winner on Twitter, so I'd like that to keep going after our home run derby.
That's true. I was live tweeting the home run derby, and then basically towards the end, it just sort of petered out, and I gave up because it was clear that I was not going to win because it got to the point where it was a mathematical impossibility. And here's the thing. I did not think about this. This is a strategy tip for next time. I did not think about the fact that you're not going to do as well if you're routinely picking people who go second in the derby. Because the guys in the front can put on a big show. They're followed by the guys after them. And the guys after them will win if they only hit one more than their previous opponent. So they don't have an incentive to hit a bunch more. And so I ended up doing exactly that. I was with a bunch of guys on the right side of the bracket who went second in the order. And they would hit one more than their opponent and then throw up their arms in victory and walk away. And I'd be like, no, I'm still 8 home runs down to Pete. This is stupid.
Well, I enjoyed it. I thought your strategy was on point, my friend.
Well, thank you.
How good was that home run derby, though?
It was fun.
2 weeks ago at this point, and we took our own little all-star break. But how good was that home run derby?
I thought it was fun. I was not expecting guys like Javi Baez to do as well as they did. Rhys Hoskins, by the way, just putting on a show. And yeah, I also thought the crowd was really into it. I was watching the live broadcast, of course, and thought the broadcast was really good. It just seemed like there was so much good energy. I thought, you know, kudos to your people in Washington, Pete, because I thought you guys put on a great all-star weekend, all things considered. I mean, it was great from beginning to finish, I thought.
Yeah, a year that isn't going well at all in Washington. That was a fun little break. And I had a couple friends who were there sending me pictures, and it sounds like the experience, honestly, no matter who you were rooting for, it was just a good time. I'm glad the rain that we were worried about for the All-Star game itself kind of broke free like 3 hours before game time, so everything happened on time. I'm sure the MLB was relieved that all went. I can't remember a rain delay in an All-Star game, but that would have been disastrous. So, no, man, it was great. It was great to see my hometown guy get the win, but overall, it just looked like a lot of fun. It really did. So I'm happy with it. I think Cleveland will put on a good show next year as long as the Indians keep performing. I think that there's a lot of excitement building in a lot of these cities that have historically not had the excitement. So I'm excited, and you know how I feel about the All-Star game, that it would have taken a real dud for me not to be into it, but it was good. It was great, actually. Let's be honest.
This is a random question, but do you have any teams in baseball or pro sports in general that you just have this almost, maybe visceral is too strong of a word, but you just have this gut instinct to dislike? And for like no rational reason or no reason that you can really explain, you just have never liked this team and you don't have a good reason why?
Oh, I'm trying to think.
Because while you're thinking, I'll just tell you, like, in baseball, I have to actively fight these biases where, for whatever reason, I don't like the Red Sox and I don't like the Indians. And I know there are probably plenty of reasons to dislike those teams, just like there are reasons to dislike other teams as a fan. But, like, I don't think I have actually any good reasons to dislike them. I just, like, I don't like them. Like, maybe there's something subconscious, you know, goes back to maybe when I was a kid and I evaluated teams more on like uniforms, maybe I didn't like uniform combos or something and it just like stuck with me the whole time. But to this day, I don't like the Red Sox or the Yankees. But, you know, as much as there is to hate about the Yankees, like I will root against the Red Sox whenever the Yankees play them.
Huh. I'm interested in that. I think for me, for some reason, I've never been a Mets fan. I don't know if it's just that they were the little brother in New York, but not ever the underdog. Like, it's fun to root for the underdog. It's right. Not fun to root for the Mets.
I think that's not really unique. The Mets are just a disastrous organization.
Yeah, and I think that's what it is the Mets chronically tell you how bad their lives are, playing in Queens and being the underdog to the Yankees, but their ownership is terrible. I don't find their fan base particularly endearing. And yeah, there's just something about the Mets that I will never root for those guys.
Yeah.
I mean, World Series against the Royals, it wasn't even a question in my mind who I was going to root for.
Yeah, so. I think that's right. I mean, I definitely root for the Mets against the Mets against the Royals, but that was more because of a National League bias on my part.
Well, that's what surprises me, is going for the American League club, but that's how little I like the dudes in Queens.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, maybe it is the same way. I will say that that the young talent on the Indians and Red Sox really does excite me, and it's making those biases go away a little bit more. Like, as I watch guys like Mookie Betts and Benintendi and Francisco Lindor, Jose Ramirez, like, those guys are just so much fun to watch. And it's impossible not to like guys like Francisco Lindor or Mookie. So I think I'm working on these unconscious biases, but slowly but surely.
Yeah, I mean, the Red Sox are trending in that direction. I wonder if you've got that inherent bias because for so long it was fun to root for the Red Sox because they looked like they were never going to win a World Series, much like the Cubs. And the second they won it, that all of a sudden they looked like a Goliath, and it wasn't fun anymore to root for them because you were now rooting for Goliath. So I was thinking about that with the Cubs because I was such a big Cubs homer back.
Dude, I was too. I was just thinking about this. Yeah.
And
I was watching that 16 series, and I was just saying, I've never liked the Indians, right? I was rooting for the Cubs so strongly in that series, and I was so nervous in Game 7 when it went to extras and it was down to the wire. But now I'm like, I'm over the Cubs. Like,
yeah,
move on, guys.
Yeah, it's kind of the curse in sports. Like, it's so much fun to root for the underdog, but it's not ever fun to root for the favorite. So, I was trying to figure out why I'm not so diehard Red Sox, diehard Cubs, or anything. I used to root for those guys all the time, and it's not a dislike, but it's not as fun anymore.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I wonder too if like it has to do with the players that I grew up watching. You know, maybe I was never a Yankees fan, but I like Jeter. I mean, who our age didn't like Jeter?
Sure.
And there weren't the same. I mean, I guess there were some players in the Red Sox. I mean, Ortiz was pretty likable. Manny was polarizing but likable. I mean, so yeah. maybe it's not just as simple as personalities, but there are just some Yankees guys that I remember growing up watching and loving, like Derek Jeter and Bernie Williams and Jorge Posada and stuff like that. So maybe part of the Red Sox problem is there.
Man, I'll tell you when the Sox sent Nomar over to the Cubbies.
Yeah,
that
2004, I think, right?
Yeah, I had my Nomar shirt. I was all in on the Red Sox, and I felt betrayed with that. And then Johnny Damon went to the Yankees, and it just...
Oh, yeah, I remember the Damon trade.
It felt like all the guys I grew up rooting for so much were gone so quickly that, yeah. I mean, you know, as a little kid, middle school, you live and die by the players. You don't live and die by the team. So I think as those guys moved, my interest waned quite a bit.
Do you remember when the Yankees made Damon cut his hair?
Yeah, I do.
He looks so different. Oh man, should we talk about some trade deadline stuff here, Pete?
Yeah. I mean, that Nomar trade was a big trade deadline thing back in 2004. So
it was.
Let's talk about 2018 trade deadlines.
Yeah. So I went through Roster Resource for our listeners. If you ever want to stay up on transaction news, I highly recommend Roster Resource. It's just rosterresource.com, and they've got MLB transaction tracker. So I went through there and basically tried to identify all the highest profile trades since the All-Star break. And a few stood out to me. I'll just read them off here. So we've got the Dodgers acquiring Manny Machado, of course. That was the big blockbuster one. That was the timing was so interesting, and it basically broke like right before the All-Star break or All-Star game, but it wasn't quite confirmed. So like, it was really awkward because Manny Machado was out there chatting with who was he chatting with?
He was taking selfies with, who was that on the Dodgers who he was taking selfies with? I'm gonna look it up.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But he was out there like during the game, basically taking pictures with a player from the Dodgers, and then the Dodgers just picked up Ryan Dozier from the Twins, so they're bolstering their middle infield, which is I think gonna change the landscape in the NL West.
Absolutely.
Boston Matt acquired
Kemp,
Nathan.
That's who he was taking selfies with.
What's that?
Matt Kemp.
That's who of course. Yeah. With. Yeah.
And so, then Matt Kemp got interviewed during the game, and they asked him about it.
I know. And it was basically like no comment, right? Because he was on the mic. Which, by the way, that's another thing. We need to see that happen more in baseball, Pete.
Dude, that was a lot of fun.
The mic'd up players in the field. I mean, I was also thinking of when they did that for Mookie earlier this season. Remember that? Like, there was a ball hit over his head, and he starts chasing it, and he's like, I'm not going to get this one, boys.
Yeah, was that spring training where he was going to the wall? He's like... Yeah, that was great.
So fun. Totally like agree. we need more of that. And actually, this is a little teaser, Pete. I don't think I've even told you this, but I'm working on a written piece right now on how to save baseball. And you know, because I think baseball is in trouble, but I think baseball is the greatest sport in America. And I think we need to think seriously about some ways to save it for the foreseeable future. And one of my points is going to be doing that, like finding ways to sort of innovate on the way we present the game, you know, the way we do broadcasts, incorporate more players and be able to have player personalities shine through a little bit more. So I think that stuff's great. But sorry, go ahead.
We need to humanize these players more. And that's exactly the things like the miking up the players.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
On these games is so important that for so long, baseball players weren't allowed to show emotion. And we never heard from baseball players that, as we started to see the Yasiel Puigs with the bat flips and we get players mic'd up, you feel for these guys a lot more and you really get to know more. So I'm interested to read your piece.
Well, and our listeners know that we are very pro bat flip anyway. So
fact.
You know, bring on the bat flips. It's only going to help baseball. So more of these acquisitions, I'll just hit the really high profile ones here. So the Cubs picking up Cole Hamels from the Rangers. You know, Cole Hamels is excited about that because who wants to be a Ranger these days? Yankees picked up J.A. Happ. I thought this was interesting, too, because they also got Zach Britton from the Orioles and Lance Lynn from the Twins. Milwaukee.
The Twins are in a fire sale, aren't they? Like, five players have left the Twins since Friday.
They totally are. It's the Twins and the Orioles competing for biggest fire sale, I think. You know, another miserable team, the Royals, trading away Mike Moustakas to Milwaukee, which I think is a... trade for Milwaukee. It's uninspiring. I was really hoping Milwaukee would be the winner of the Machado sweepstakes, but not to be. Houston, this is another one we can talk about, acquiring Roberto Osuna from Toronto, and that's a lightning rod of controversy because of his domestic violence allegations that are still winding their way through the Canadian criminal justice system. And I think that's it. That's all the high-profile ones that I have. Did I miss any really big ones, Pete?
Did you mention Wilson Ramos to the Phillies? I thought that was fairly significant.
I did not yet. And you pair that with Asdrubal Cabrera from the Mets, who also went to the Phillies. I think, the Phillies are you know, they're not going to be huge spenders at the deadline, obviously. That was never the plan. They weren't going to, you know, try to get a Bryce Harper rental from the Nats. But they were in the Machado conversation because they want to get Machado next year after his contract's up. And I think at this point, their game plan is let's do what we can to be able to maintain the razor slim lead we have over the Braves and try to win the NL East. I think that's basically the plan. And I think they might have done just enough to do that. I think Ramos is a big upgrade for them. And it's Jubal Cabrera gives them some good depth there.
Do you think Ramos is going to start there in Philly? I kind of interpreted it as a I didn't even know how to interpret it, to be honest, because I mean it's not like they have a slouch but behind home plate, but Wilson Ramos was an all-star this year. So to make that trade for an all-star, you're not looking for him to come off the bench. But I'm interested in your perspective as to what's the future of who's going to be catching permanently for the Phillies, or are we going to do a catcher by committee here, which I think is kind of a bad idea?
No, I think it'll be Ramos. I mean, he, you know, I'm looking at his stats right now, 267, 312, 446 with a 325 WOBA, 0.7 in WAR. I think he's the clear leader for that position. You know, the other guy who might do some rotation in with him is Jorge Alfaro, maybe a little bit of Andrew Knapp, but it'll be mostly Alfaro, I think. And Alfaro's numbers just across the board are lower than Ramos's. So I think he's an instant upgrade for the Phillies at that position. He's, you know, he's an all-star, but we talked about in our all-star episode, we talked about our all-star selection episode. We talked about the dearth of good talent at the catcher position in the majors right now. Yeah. And Wilson Ramos is not an exception. So this guy's not your prototypical all-star. He's not he's not a Mike Piazza, but he's certainly an above average catcher. And I think he is, for that reason, a good upgrade for the Phillies there.
Yeah. Let's stick to Pennsylvania real quick. And what'd you think about the Pittsburgh Pirates, the Buccos, going for Chris Sale today in what I thought was a pretty big surprise that they're willing to go after him? You might remember they parted ways with Cole Hamels over the winter break.
Garrett Cole.
I think Garrett Cole is easily in the top five for Cy Young contention right now. I don't think he's going to win based on his competition, even in Houston with Justin Verlander. But they parted ways with a guy who is a Cy Young candidate to pick up Chris Archer here, who has been good in Tampa Bay on a pretty disappointing Tampa Bay team who's not in contention. But what are the Pirates trying to say right now, you think?
Yeah, I think basically what it comes down to for the Pirates is them trying to lock up the second NL wild card. Because looking at the landscape right now, you have the Phillies ahead of the Braves by a half a game. And you have the Cubs ahead of the Brewers by a game. And you have the Dodgers ahead of the D-backs by a half a game. And you have the Pirates sitting six games behind the Brewers. So I think the thinking is, on their part, the Pirates are sitting at 55 wins, the D-backs at 59, the Braves at 56. So the Pirates are really just behind the Braves as far as win-loss record goes, and a few games behind the Brewers, a few games behind the D-backs. So I think they're just thinking, again, if we can make some sort of a trade to bolster our starting rotation, since we traded away our ace and we maybe shouldn't have traded away Cole now that we look back on it. I think they're trying to sort of atone for past sins. They just want to bolster the rotation just enough to get another couple wins by the end of the season, maybe get lucky, get another three or four wins, and maybe, just maybe, slide into a second playoff spot. And then there they are. Their playoff drought is over.
Yeah, I didn't love the prospects they gave up today. Not prospects, but starters, giving up Glasnow and Meadows, so a pitcher and an outfielder. It's an interesting move, but they've got Chris Archer through 2021. So in a team who is very open about being in a rebuilding period right now, I mean, they're kind of holding true to that they're pulling in young talent as well as a solid dude to hammer down the rotation. And they're not going to have to part ways with him in October when he demands too much money. Like, we've seen so many free agents. I mean, you think of the Dodgers can obviously afford to pay Manny Machado. The Nationals are going to have an issue with Bryce Harper. We're seeing a lot of trades with guys who only have 2 to 3 months left of eligibility on a big league club. I think that was a solid pickup, getting a guy who is going to be under Pittsburgh Pirate control here for the next 2.5 years. So interesting trades today, especially with today being the trade deadline.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm as much of a Chris Archer fan as you are. I just, I don't know if I see it. I mean, his ERA is 4.3 this year. His FIP is a little better, 3.62. His xFIP is the same. But this guy is not a paradigm-changing pitcher. He's the kind of guy, I don't know, he's like a J.A. Happ level. He's the kind of guy you can bring in to be a serviceable dude in like the fourth or fifth spot in your rotation, but he's not going to... I don't think he's going to do what the Pirates want him to. I think really this is them trying to make up for the Cole mistake, because they shouldn't have traded away Cole. This makes the Cole trade look even worse than it did at the time.
Yeah, well, that's That's certainly true, as you're talking about the mistakes of that trade. I think what the Pirates are looking for more than anything else, though, is to get some help for the middle innings and their relieving core, because that relieving core is just getting used up so much right now. Obviously, they've had a fantastic July where they won, 11, 12 straight? They took 5 straight from Milwaukee on that crazy weekend series. So I think that this was a kind of a long-term try to prevail against the odds of just crushing your young arm so much. So it's
I think that's right.
You're right. He's not going to be an all-star in Pittsburgh in the next year and a half. But I think it was a good move to try to give your franchise a little more longevity than they had 3 days ago.
You know, when I looked him up, I was surprised at how old he was. It doesn't seem like he's been around for as long as he has, but he's 29. And so, you know, it sounds great that he's through 2021, but, you know, by 2021, he's going to be in his early 30s and, you know, just elevated risk for injury. That's generally when you see player performance start to decline anyway. So, you know, on paper, it sounds great. You lock down this serviceable starter for 3 more years, but there really are no guarantees. So.
Well, you know what I am looking at, which is a guarantee, is I have a cup from the Durham Bulls in 2013 that has a AAA Chris Archer on it right now. So I feel like I got to keep rooting for this guy. I've seen him back in 2013 in the Durham Bulls, which is one of the best minor league stadiums you will ever find out there a little north of Raleigh-Durham. But
Durham's great, by the way.
Great city overall. But yeah, I felt like I had to give a little love to Chris Archer since his souvenir soda.
That's fair. Your cognitive biases make more sense to me now. You're a Durham Bulls booster. All right, so let's do a few quick questions here on the trade deadline here, Pete. So now that we're past the trade deadline, everything we've seen so far, who do you think wins the trade season this year?
So you're not going to like my first answer, which is actually, well, let me caveat it with this. I thought the Dodgers getting Manny Machado is exactly what they needed. I also like the Brian Dozier pickup today. I think the Dodgers have been the most sound. And I don't think I'm going to get a lot of pushback on that from anyone. But let me tell you the two franchises who aren't going to win it all this year based on the moves they made today, but made the moves that they need to make to send a message not only to the clubhouse, but the fan base that they're in it for real. And those are our two teams out of Pennsylvania here. So I think the Phillies getting Wilson Ramos and Asdrubal Cabrera was exactly what they need to do in terms of beefing up that offense. Obviously, we're still playing the sabermetrics game a lot in Philadelphia, but I liked that they really are committing to this season, which I really didn't think Gabe Kapler's team was going to be doing here the last day of July. I really didn't. So I was impressed with the Phillies and what they were doing. I'm also impressed with the Pittsburgh Pirates. So I have a lot of good friends who are diehard Pittsburgh Pirates fans. And the complaints coming out of that fan base for the last 7-8 years is that ownership is not willing to spend money and management is always willing to sell low and buy high. And that is not what I think the Pittsburgh Pirates did this year. I agree that Cole deal was atrocious. And we knew it was going to be atrocious back when it happened during the hot stove. But I like that they are showing the fan base and the clubhouse that they're not willing to throw in the towel this year. And they're willing to commit to the fact that they're in it this year. I really and truly don't think they have the horses to get that second wild card spot. Obviously, another streak where they could maybe get 7-8 games against an NL Central opponent could really change that. But I like the message they sent. It's not to get them over the hump here in 2018, but I like that for once in Pittsburgh, we're seeing that ownership really seem to commit. I mean, letting Andrew McCutchen go last year, I know his numbers were down, but McCutchen was the face of that franchise, and they let him go. They let Cole go. They keep bringing in all this old talent. I'm thinking of the guys like David Freese who they're willing to go in on. And it's just the moves just don't make sense that they were money-saving moves for so long. So I really like what they're willing to do here. And I really like that they're willing to kind of make themselves the story at the trade deadline for buying instead of selling. So I'm high on them. Obviously, the Yankees, what they did was incredible. Between the Yankees, the Red Sox, and the Dodgers, I mean, business as usual. All three teams were so strong. But I like the messages we sent with this trade deadline more than I remember at a lot of other trade deadlines. How about you?
Yeah, so first of all, on your Pittsburgh point, I like that you're highlighting them. I looked into some of the Pittsburgh postseason misery, and it's not pretty. So they went to the NL wild card one game playoff in 2014 or 13, 14, and 15. They won in 13, beat the Reds. And then went on to lose to the Cardinals in the NLDS. But it went to five games. They just lost the fifth game. Sad.
Yep. Michael Walker with that one, as I remember.
Yep. And then lost the wild card game in 14 and 15. Apart from that, they went to seven games in the NLCS in 91, lost to the Braves. They went to six games in the 90 NLCS, lost to the Reds. And they went to seven games again in the NLCS in 92, lost to the same Braves. So they either are very far away from success or they come oh so close and don't win it. The last time they won a championship was in 79 against the Orioles. And that one, too, could have gone the other way. They won that in seven games. So anyway, just to add to your point about the misery of Pittsburgh fans. You know, I also liked what you said about the Yankees. I think the Yankees did exactly what they needed to do. They find themselves in a tough position so far back from the Red Sox, but they have a big weekend series against the Red Sox coming up here. I think, you know, if they do a sweep this weekend, it changes the whole picture for the AL East, and they at least have momentum, and that gap looks way more achievable. But really, I mean, I think the bolstering of their bullpen, the adding of Britton and Lynn specifically, that was really geared towards the postseason, I think, because that's when you're really going to need to lean on your bullpen. And I think the J.A. Happ thing, they're not like, oh yeah, we got a new ace in J.A. Happ right alongside Severino. He's really just that, you know, sort of like, let's add a serviceable guy who can be a fourth or fifth arm starting pitcher for us and maybe do some good. So I think the Yankees did exactly what they needed to do as well.
Do you think, kind of to that point, do you think the Red Sox putting Chris Sale on the DL today is significant for the Red Sox? So they're going into the series against the Yankees. Their pitching has been fantastic. Their offense has obviously been better. You think losing a guy like Chris Sale, who this year I think has had a very surprising year with, I mean, what's he got, like a 2.0-something ERA, 207 strikeouts. Let me look at his WAR, a 6.4. He's gone 11-4
amazing.
This year.
Amazing.
I mean, could something like this be exactly what the Yankees were waiting for to kind of seize and get back into this? Or do you think the Red Sox are going to be okay and not going after a dynamic arm? Obviously, you don't know what's going to happen to Chris Sale. But not going after a dynamic arm could kind of be their undoing this year.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, the Red Sox got Nate Eovaldi from the Rays. Not quite an inspiring trade. Yeah, I think the Sale thing, exactly what you're saying. I think it could be the win that the Yankees need in their sales. He would have definitely been on the rotation schedule to pitch against the Yankees this weekend. That's not going to happen. So what is Eovaldi going to start in his place? I don't know, but it's not going to be someone who's as good as Sale. You know, Price has actually been more good than bad this year, but historically, that's not something that he achieves over a full season. So I think there's a window here, and I think the Yankees sense it, and I appreciate their killer instincts going for it. I'm no Yankees fan, remember, but I think they really did a lot for themselves. But I would have to say the winner of the trade season is the Dodgers. Winning the Machado sweepstakes and then picking up Dozier, I think they've done what they know they needed to do, which was basically get an offensive spark and shore up their middle infield after the loss of Seager and the sort of serviceable but not great play of Chris Taylor at second. So having an infield now with Dozier and Machado, Dozier's been kind of slumping all year, but I think there's plenty of reason to think he can turn it around. He's coming into the easier league, you know, he'll be having good weather later in the year down in the NL West. So I think there's lots of reason to think that Dozier could become a very productive player for the Dodgers, and there's no reason to think that Machado will not continue to be.
Okay, so I think we're in agreement that the Dodgers did exactly what they had to do. Obviously, the big three of the Dodgers, Yankees, and Red Sox were still exactly what they needed as they were going through, and it'll be kind of the races we expected. But talking about the less pretty side of the MLB trade deadline here on July 31st that happens every year, who's the loser?
This for me is a no-brainer. We didn't talk about this trade yet, but Tommy Pham got sent from the storied franchise in St. Louis, the St. Louis Cardinals, down to the Tampa Bay Rays. So
did he get a raw deal?
Tommy Pham is my selection for the loser of the trade season.
I agree. I agree that Tommy Pham got the raw deal of a lifetime. So I'm going to lay out three teams, two of which aren't going to surprise you as my losers, and the third might, but that's because we don't talk about them too much here on Third String, and we probably should. I think the Nationals not doing anything was the statement to the fan base and the clubhouse that they believe in the team, which is good, but the team isn't working right now. So the inability to do something, I think, was a stronger message than anything else, that the window is closing and Mike Rizzo, who's the GM of the Nats, is going to do whatever he can to keep it open just a little longer instead of closing it on this year and trying to reopen it here again in the future. We can debate the Bryce Harper.
Yeah, I definitely have thoughts on that, but I want to hear your other two teams and then we can talk about the Bryce Harper thing.
So I didn't like the statement the Nationals made. I thought the Cardinals letting Tommy Pham walk, well, not walk, but get traded, was a further statement, as we've talked about a couple times.
What did Tommy Pham ever do to Mo?
Right? Something is, as we knew, whether it was when we talked about Dexter Fowler with Eshon or like we talked about with the Mike Matheny getting fired right before the All-Star break, something is very, very bad in that clubhouse right now. And I don't know if it's from top to bottom. There are actually reports out of St. Louis today that Tommy Pham, one, was upset about his contract renewal that was only for $530,000 before the season started. But two, that he requested some exercise equipment that the Cardinals said no to, and he got mad and told ownership how much he hated them. I don't believe either of those, that he was truly that upset. Obviously, there's always more than I get, but something is incredibly rotten in that St. Louis clubhouse right now. So this is not the end of the problems for the Cardinals. But my third, the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. So letting Ian Kinsler go, who I know is having a down year for the Angels. I think he's had a pretty good last couple weeks. I thought this was a great pickup by the Red Sox to get a guy who would be solid at defense to replace Dustin Pedroia. So I think for the Red Sox, it was a great move. But if you're an Angels fan and you're on a franchise who has been underperforming for the last 4 to 5 years, and you're letting guys like Ian Kinsler go at the trade deadline for really nothing in return, Mike Trout's not going to be there forever. Albert Pujols is so old, he can barely walk to first when he gets that intentional walk. What is there to look forward to if you're an Angels fan right now?
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, Shohei Ohtani maybe coming back if his stem cell platelet therapy works.
Yeah, I'm just really down on the Angels and their inability to ever do something. I mean, granted, the Houston Astros are having a great year, as we expected they would. But otherwise, the division was pretty wide open when it started. The Mariners have been surprisingly good. But, I mean, what's the Angels' long-term game plan here?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what it is. I've never really understood the Angels' long-term game plan. I've never understood a team that is content to, you know, basically be perpetually mediocre while having the best player in baseball on your team. I don't really understand that strategy. But yeah. I'm hopeful that the, you know, Mike Trout, who's, of course, a Jersey son and a fan of the Phillies all growing up, I'm hopeful that the Phillies will be able to put together some mega package to put together for the Angels in the next couple years and get Trout over to be a Philly.
I would not enjoy that. I know you would, so I'll let you have that one.
Well, let's talk about, you know, our hometown teams growing up, and let's go back to the Nationals thing and Bryce Harper. So Bryce Harper, you know, there were reports today that he could get traded by the trade deadline earlier today. First question, how many times at work today were you checking ESPN to see if Bryce Harper had been traded?
So many, I probably shouldn't even say it. But what I will say is the nice thing about being on the West Coast was I got to work about 6:45 this morning, and I think by about 8:15, 8:30 local, Mike Rizzo had come out to say that the Nationals were not going to trade Bryce Harper.
Oh, so yeah, that's true, man. I was hoping you'd be like sitting at your desk, like sweating, just clicking refresh on ESPN.com or like MLBtraderumors.com. But
well,
no,
I was sweating at my desk because it's Vegas, and I was hitting refresh on all of these sites until that time. But yeah, I'm lucky that I got to focus on whatever it was Chris Archer was doing today instead of Bryce getting traded. But yeah, that was crazy with the reports coming out last night that he was on the trade block. We knew the Dodgers had called. There were a couple other teams. I think the Indians had called at some point. Very, very interesting. So before I get on
if Bryce Harper had gone to the Dodgers, I would have just – it's like the you know, the new Golden State Warriors. This is just how California does sports now.
Well, so here is my grand theory on all this, is Bryce Harper wanted to be a Dodger. I think the second the Yankees made all those moves over the last postseason, we knew that the Yankees were no longer the top team because they couldn't pay him and they really didn't need him. I think the Dodgers, based on their location in Las Vegas, where Bryce is of course from, I think that big city allure is something Bryce wants. And I just think when the Dodgers went for Manny Machado and committed to him on this year, they sent the clear message that they were not willing to pay through the roof to get Bryce for the second half of the year, because Bryce has had a mediocre year at best, aside from winning the Home Run Derby. what has he done this year? I mean,
yeah, agreed.
If anything, he's been a drag on that Nationals offense, which has already been struggling. I mean, if you're the Dodgers, you wouldn't be willing to pay too much. So I really wouldn't be surprised if the Nationals had shopped him around. But I think the timing just wasn't right for Bryce to go to the Dodgers. I still am not sure that come next April, he won't be wearing Dodger blue. I'm really not.
So this is interesting, though. What would you say about this idea that I have? If I'm Mike Rizzo, I think I actually aggressively try to make a deal happen in the, you know, I intentionally wait to make it an 11th hour thing, but I try to make a deadline trade happen in the 8 hours or so on deadline day. For a couple of reasons. One, if what you're saying is correct, and I'm sure Mike Rizzo has a better idea than, you know, we, the third string armchair analysts do.
I don't agree with that at all.
I'm sure Mike Rizzo has a better inclination of where Bryce Harper wants to be next year, right? Whether or not he's thinking he could be in DC or wants to be in LA or whatever. Rizzo probably at least has more info to make an educated guess on that than we do. Yeah. So if he thinks that Harper's going to want to go to L.A. and he knows that L.A. is willing to, you know, flout the luxury tax and all of this to get its stars there, wouldn't you want to turn one of your assets into, and I say assets, you know, sort of tongue in cheek. I know these people are players, not assets, but wouldn't you want to turn one of your players into something that can help your team now or in the future? So do that. The second thing is, what about this, you know, this Aroldis Chapman model? You do the little rental thing, right? You basically flip Harper for half a season to the Dodgers or to somebody. You get a haul of prospects in return. And then you have a wink-wink agreement or just a common understanding with the player that you'll get him back next year, right? You'll sign him to a much bigger contract, one more like he wants, and he can come back to his hometown, and he can be the guy who is really responsible for bringing in, you know, three young prospects, three young arms or defenders or whatever the case is. I mean, doesn't that make sense to you? And I don't understand why Rizzo wouldn't at least explore that. And maybe he did. Maybe I'm not giving enough credit, but you know, why would he come out early and say, like, no, this is absolutely not happening? Because wouldn't you want to at least be open to that possibility?
I think in theory it works. I think you're forgetting the big variable here is Scott Boras, who is Bryce Harper's agent, but Steven Strasburg's agent. I think the Nationals are really having trouble with Scott Boras right now. And I don't think Scott Boras would ever be willing to make that kind of a deal, because the next guy who walks in offering more money than the Nationals are, I think he has Bryce walking somewhere else. So obviously, Bryce is still the man in charge, but I think with other agents, you can pull that off. I really don't think Scott Boras is the guy. I am not a Scott Boras fan at all. I don't think he's been good for the game.
No, not at all.
But for his clients, he's gotten a lot of money and a lot of attention. So if you're one of his clients, it's been great. But I also wonder about the Home Run Derby. So obviously, he's in his hometown. He's wearing Nationals colors. His dad is pitching to him. It is impossible not to get caught up in the emotion of that moment. But he was so pro DC and so pro Nationals, standing there with Doolittle and Max Scherzer, and they are just one big happy family. Davey Martinez is on the field. It's just so much fun. I wonder if some of that emotion was true. And I wonder if it was more than just playing to the crowd and playing to the moment. I wonder if there is a little loyalty to the Nationals, more so than I was giving it credit. And maybe maybe that's where a combination of not getting the money, not getting the market he wanted, and also feeling a little allegiance, they had that discussion. And he said he wants to make it work is kind of what I'm hoping. But I thought that Home Run Derby could have been an interesting shift in the way the Nationals handled Bryce and how Bryce handled the Nationals.
So he became hometown hero there?
Yeah, yeah. I think so. But then again, like you and I were talking about offline, the fan base is very divided on Bryce. We love Bryce because he's our guy. But I think it's pretty well understood right now that if Bryce walks, it's probably going to be better for our offense, even though we're going to lose some of our identity and we're certainly going to lose a superstar. So I think people are pretty torn right now on how they feel about Bryce. Hopefully, now that he's there, I mean, they were at home tonight, I know, in D.C. Hopefully he got a good standing ovation and the people were behind him. But nobody knows what to do about Bryce Harper anymore. And it's just so interesting that those reports surfaced. Maybe that was all part of Rizzo's master plan to shop him around and at least feel the market and talk to Bryce. I don't know. Maybe they never intended to trade him, or maybe they did intend to trade him and just couldn't get a good enough offer.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. We are almost out of time, Pete, and I want to talk a little bit about football. Do you have anything else on baseball trade deadline stuff before we
pivot? No, fun trade deadline, but no, that's all I got.
It was. I know it was surprisingly fun. There was actually more activity than I thought there would be.
Same.
But okay, so let's pivot to football real quick. And we're going to do later on, starting in a couple weeks, we're going to start to do our full season previews, and we're going to do it sort of division by division like we did for the MLB in the spring. But I've got one question for you. Just a little teaser to get our juices flowing for the upcoming football previews. Okay. So I think it's going to be a fun season. Lots of good tantalizing off-season storylines. Some interesting and polarizing draft prospects like we talked about in our draft episode. I looked at odds today. The current odds for Super Bowl champions. And there are a number of teams that are all at odds that basically are equivalent to 7% or greater chance of winning the Super Bowl. Those teams are the Patriots, and this is in descending order. So the Patriots, laughably, somehow the odds-on favorite to win the Super Bowl. That's another discussion. But the Patriots are at the top. Eagles, Rams, Steelers, Vikings, and Packers. So I'm going to say you can't answer with any of those because they are not favorites, but they're at least the top tier of the league as far as chances to win a Super Bowl per Vegas. So apart from those teams that I listed, again, Patriots, Eagles, Rams, Steelers, Vikings, and Packers, who is your favorite training camp dark horse to take home the Lombardi Trophy this year?
Oh, boy, that's tough. Oh.
If you need a second to think about it, I can go ahead with mine.
You go with yours. I have it in mind, but I'm interested to hear yours first because I'm lame and I'm going to hide behind whatever you pick and go with something else.
All right. So so this is from a dear friend of the podcast, a DFOP, we can say, a dear friend of the podcast, Taylor Young, who also hosts the Vernacular Podcast Network's basketball podcast, Takes of the Game. You should check that out wherever you get your podcasts.
Great show.
And Taylor's been on here before, and we'll probably actually have him come on to talk about the AFC South when the time comes, because my dark horse candidate is the Houston Texans. Of course, Deshaun Watson returning, who was, as an Eagles guy, I have to say, second only to Carson Wentz, of course, but one of the most electrifying quarterbacks in the league last year before the very unfortunate ACL tear.
Yeah.
And you're pairing him with, Jadeveon Clowney, who is reportedly coming back healthy after offseason knee surgery, and J.J. Watt, who could be, fully healthy for the first time in really several years after the devastating back injuries and all of that. So I think the Texans are putting together what could look like a package of very effective playmakers, including some X-factors, the ringers, Danny Kelly listed J.J. Watt as the X-factor on the Houston Texans this year, and I have to agree with him, although Deshaun Watson's right there as well. I think there are some really dynamic guys who could make a big difference, and I wouldn't be talking about them if they were in the NFC, but they happen to play in the AFC, which is basically a heap of garbage with the Patriots sitting on the top. So I think the Texans could do something. I think we could be sitting here talking about them, next February in a Super Bowl. What do you think?
Well, I like that pick. The AFC South is always so weird. The Colts think Andrew Luck is coming back healthier than ever this year. Obviously, the Jags did something in the playoffs last year. That'll be interesting. I like that pick, though, because how can you ever root against J.J. Watt? Like, he's the best guy in football.
Right.
I mean, we all are doing better when J.J. Watt is on the field. I am going to jump over to the NFC because that's the division I know a little better. We talked about it both at the on our draft day podcast as well as when the season ended. I'm pretty high on the San Francisco 49ers. I think Jimmy Garoppolo is poised to really continue what he did last year. I think Marquise Goodwin is going to be solid. I think Richard Sherman going down to the 49ers from Seattle could be interesting. I think the 49ers under Kyle Shanahan, who I'm not a huge fan of, have shown me that they are trending in the right direction, and I'm interested to see what they do.
I think that's a really good pick as well. I think if I can put my Skip Bayless hat on, I'd be like, man, I don't know if Garoppolo can handle the pressure. He was photographed on a date with a porn star. This guy can't handle being in the center of this. He's not ready for San Francisco, not ready to be a starting QB. He hasn't learned enough from Tom Brady. He's too prideful and arrogant, et cetera. But I think that the on-field performance indicates that all of that criticism is missing the point, that he's a very talented quarterback, and I think at the helm of a Kyle Shanahan-led offense, this could be pretty devastating.
Yeah, I'm excited. I think that the West Coast has some interesting teams with guys like John Gruden showing up, and the Seahawks always compete somehow. I think I'm excited for football season. That's what I think. Yeah. I'll leave it there. I'm excited for football season. But you know what I'm also excited for? The drama that will follow the Dallas Cowboys, because you know they're going to start getting a lot of love.
Yes.
I'm sure they're going to tell us Dak Prescott is better than he's ever been. Ezekiel Elliott is healthy again. Things are going to be changing in Dallas. And you and I both kind of watched via text message together the Amazon Prime series on the Dallas Cowboys. So I feel like I know that team.
I do too. Excited. It's so dysfunctional. I feel like I know that Jason Garrett's not actually a real coach.
it's gonna be something.
We still need to do that special all or nothing podcast. We should schedule that maybe in conjunction with our NFL previews, because we got to talk about that. There's so much good stuff out there, in that documentary that I learned about the Cowboys that really shouldn't have been a surprise to me, but nonetheless was. And then there's the recent stuff with Dez Bryant calling Sean Lee a snake, and there's just so much delicious gossip out there.
It's gonna be good.
And you said that people are gonna say Dak Prescott's the best that he's ever been. I saw this story today on The Athletic, of all places, the place where I normally expect to find sort of reasoned, measured analysis and sports writing. But this was saying that Ezekiel Elliott is coming back as a, I forget exactly the words, but it was essentially he's coming back a renewed and changed man. And it was, telling the sob story of all of his drama last year. And he was just powerless to stop any of it when he was fighting all of the suspensions and all that. And I was like, no, he could have stopped it. He could have just sat and absorbed his suspension, admitted wrongdoing, taken responsibility. But instead of that, he shirked all of that and just continued to appeal his suspensions and never actually admitted that he did anything wrong, and was always just a self-centered prima donna throughout the entire thing. Like, of course he could have avoided that. And to tell me that he's a changed man from like one season to another off season, not buying it.
Well, it'll be fun either way to see what happens with that.
It will.
Beautiful disaster.
Oh my goodness. Cowboys. Dallas. Jerry Jones. Oh, and the anthem stuff too. Like this was a dying controversy, and then Jerry Jones just has to reassert it, forbid his players from whatever, man. That organization. I'm very glad I'm not a Cowboys fan. Very sorry if I'm offending any Cowboys fans who are on here. Would love to hear your feedback. Hopefully I'm not being too harsh, but I just have to say I'm very glad I'm not a Cowboys fan.
Well, my man, it was good to get back on the show with you. It's been too long. Good All-Star break, but good to be back.
All right, we're back. We'll be back next week, Pete. Let's do this again. Let's not let another 2 weeks go by. So to our listeners, thanks so much for listening. You can follow the pod at Third String Pod. You can follow Pete at Pete_LaFleet. You can follow me at Zach Crippen. Send us your questions, comments, complaints, anything we missed. What can we do better? What do you think of the stuff we talked about? What was the best trade of MLB? What was the worst? What are your preseason NFL teams you've got an eye on? Let us know. We look forward to hearing from you. We'll put you on the pod. All right. Thanks so much, Pete. You have a great week. To our listeners, thanks a lot. See you next week.